540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. Heat advisory is up once again from the southwest into New England. CBS's Jim Krasula says the September sizzle still packs a dangerous punch.
The excitement is there. So is the heat. Countless schools have already had to cancel classes. Many are without air conditioning. These parents are in Milwaukee.
No, I did understand, better safe than sorry.
I get it, though. They're looking out for the welfare of the kids.
Parent Elgin Harris.
They definitely need to throw some funding into the schools.
In the South, canceled classes because of the heat are already cutting into snow days built into the school schedule.
For the sixth time in 6 weeks, an inmate death has been reported at the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta. Lowey Davis is a family attorney for the family of the 24-year-old man who was found unresponsive.
Lives remain in danger in the Fulton County Jail in ways that none of us could have possibly imagined over the last 2 to 3 years.
The Justice Department opened a civil rights investigation there earlier this summer. There's a new federal health advisory about a deadly flesh-eating bacteria.
The CDC issued the alert after receiving reports of an uptick in Vibrio infections, including 8 deaths, 5 of which were in Florida. Andrea Garcia is with the American Medical Association.
Most people with Vibrio infection have diarrhea. Some might also have stomach cramping, nausea, vomiting, fever, and chills. However, the species that is the subject of this particular alert is known to cause life-threatening infections.
CDC urging healthcare professionals to be on the lookout for this as a possible cause of infected wounds that were exposed to coastal waters, especially near the Gulf of Mexico or East Coast. And if you have cuts or open wounds, stay out of the water. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News Atlanta.
A federal judge in Boston has sentenced a wealthy Russian businessman with ties to the Kremlin to 9 years in prison. It's for his role in a nearly $100 million insider trading scheme that relied on stolen company earnings information. CBS's Cammie McCormick tells us medical manpower is stretched so thin in war-torn Ukraine, some women could soon get the call.
The government in Ukraine is now requiring women with medical or pharmaceutical degrees to register with the military service, and their travel abroad will be restricted. The government says this does not mean they'll be on the front lines, but their eligibility for military service will be determined to make sure Ukraine has enough medical workers if needed.
More accolades today for a country music superstar.
I got a heart like a truck.
Lainey Wilson topping the field with 9 CMA nominations. Wall Street, the Dow is up 64 points. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state, and in your own backyard. This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. People can start making appointments again with Privia and HSHS Health System. A cyber attack caused communication systems to go down for more than a week. People in northern Wisconsin are beginning to see PFAS contamination in their water. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
The Wisconsin DNR has been testing groundwater in private wells in the town of Stella, just outside of Rhinelander. Some well tests have returned readings of 36,000 parts per trillion of PFAS. The state standard set for the family of chemicals is 70 parts per trillion. The forever chemicals have also been found in several Northwoods lakes, the Wisconsin River and the Pelican River. PFAS have also been linked to several different types of cancer and various other health concerns. Members of the community near Stella also fear the impact it may have on tourism if visitors learn the lakes and rivers are contaminated with the forever chemicals. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
Governor Evers says he'll veto a $3 billion Republican tax cut the state assembly is expected to pass on Tuesday. The Democratic governor and Republican lawmakers are fighting over what to do with Wisconsin's $4 billion surplus. Republicans want tax cuts. Evers wants more money for schools, health care, and child care. Wisconsin Democrats are keeping up the pressure on Republicans thinking of impeaching Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Here's Nat Wegehout.
The $4 million Defend Justice campaign will consist of television and web ads, as well as door-knocking campaigns. The state Democratic Party will also launch a website to track Republican lawmakers' positions on impeachment. Senate Minority Leader Melissa Agar joined the Devil's Advocates radio show on Wednesday. She says the impeachment threats are the Republicans' way to change the rules and stay in power.
No one twisted the arms of over a million voters in Republican districts to vote for Justice Protasiewicz in this race. This was a decision that was between individuals and themselves and their ballot boxes.
Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Meanwhile, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says the campaign proves Protasiewicz is closely tied to the Democratic Party. State lawmakers are moving to keep Wisconsin's top high school graduates in Wisconsin. A bill would guarantee every student in Wisconsin who graduates in the top 5% of their high school class admission to a UW system school. Representative Jerry O'Connor.
The bottom line is that we are losing too many of our best and brightest high school graduates to neighboring colleges and universities. And is this not a form of institutionalized brain drain for Wisconsin?
The bill got a hearing before the Assembly Colleges and Universities Committee today. It would also apply to grads whose ACT scores are in the top 5% statewide. Authors of the bill also say race and gender should not be considerations in UW admissions. The federal government is negotiating with drug makers to lower the cost of 10 prescription drugs for people on Medicare. Senator Tammy Baldwin says she thinks drug makers will lower those drug prices across the board, much like what happened with insulin under the Inflation Reduction Act.
When we did that, a number of the companies that manufacture insulin said they were going to lower prices for everybody, not just those on Medicare. So I think that's the sort of ripple effect and influence that we will see with these other 10 drugs.
But many drug makers are pushing back. They say negotiations amount to unconstitutional price controls. The owners of a Door County resort say they plan to rebuild after a devastating fire the other day. A large portion of Raleigh's Bay Resort burned to the ground Tuesday. Raleigh's Bay Resort is more than 70 years old. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
With the news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Demo work on the Horizon West condos could start October 1st. The Waukesha Common Council this week approved a bid of $837,000 for the demolition of the building. The teardown follows a settlement between the city and the Horizon West Condominium Homes Association. The owners may be relieved of demolition costs, and the city could potentially recover expenses if the owners win their federal court appeal against the insurance company. The suspect in the UW-Madison assault Sunday, who graduated from UW-Milwaukee with a criminal justice degree, allegedly stayed at the scene after the attack. Madison police say Brandon Thompson pretended to be an innocent bystander at the scene, but was identified by a witness who saw him with the victim. Video footage and a license plate from the attack scene linked him to the crime. Thompson faces tentative charges of first-degree sexual assault, strangulation, and first-degree reckless injury. The victim is recovering. Thompson's lawyer says his client is innocent. A Waukesha County judge has prevented Wisconsin election officials from using a federal voter registration form, stating it was never formally approved for use in the state. The lawsuit argued that the form lacked essential information fields and had not been authorized by the Wisconsin Elections Commission. The judge ruled in favor of the plaintiff, finding that the WEC had never approved the form or established rules for its use. There will be a slight delay in the HOPS resumption of service as the intersection at Wisconsin and Broadway in Milwaukee is now expected to reopen Saturday. The area has been closed since last Friday due to an underground water main break, which led to extensive cleanup and repair work. The closure at Wisconsin and Broadway has affected the HOPS line, leading to its temporary closure. AAA has the cost of gas in Waukesha and Milwaukee counties today at around $3.55 a gallon. It's about 10 cents cheaper than it is further south in Kenosha County. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. The fall feel is here. Believe it or not, temperatures in the Northwoods will only hit highs in the 50s, while a good chunk of the rest of the state stays into the low 60s. There may be a few warmer spots possible along the southern state line where highs will flirt with 70 degrees. As winds continue to whip out of the northeast up to 15 miles per hour, it's pulled in this crisp and cool air mass. It's also creating some light showers and drizzle rolling off of Lake Superior and into portions of the Northland today. Meanwhile, the rest of the state stays dry and mostly cloudy. Tonight, the clouds will slowly clear and allow our temperatures to drop quite chilly, into the upper 40s north and mid-50s south. By tomorrow, the sun will return in full force, shoving our temperatures back into the 70s. Have a tremendous Thursday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Packers missing their top two receivers. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers missing their top two receivers. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers getting ready to play the Bears in Chicago on Sunday, but missing from practice was Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson. Head coach Matt LaFleur on what will they do if they're without their two best and most experienced wide receivers, both listed with hamstring injuries.
We've got a plan in place. You know, we'll play the guys that are available and ready to go. And the one thing about this league is nobody cares.
In the past, LaFleur has turned to running back Aaron Jones to line up as a receiver. I asked quarterback Jordan Love how is his chemistry with number 33.
It's been good. It's been something that we've been working on, but he's an explosive player in the run game and the pass game, so it's definitely a guy we got to get the ball to, get the ball in his hands and let him go do what he does and make plays. But the more we can get him, you know, running routes, doing things that he'll do in the game, the more we can use him, the better.
Is there more pressure to get the running game going with Jordan Love now at quarterback? Packers running back A.J. Dillon.
No pressure, man. We've worked hard all training camp and stuff to, you know, get our offense where we want it to be. And obviously, we still got a couple more days this week to fine-tune things. But it's not about taking pressure off of Jordan. Jordan's capable. You know, no matter what the situation is, everybody, offensive line, receivers, running backs, tight ends, the whole offense is capable.
The game Sunday at Soldier Field, kickoff at 3:25. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers remain ranked number 19th in the nation, one of four Big Ten teams in the AP's top 25 this week. The Badgers are on the road Saturday night against Washington State, game time at 6:30. Head coach Luke Fickell on how he has to prepare his team for their first road trip together.
Specific things offensive and defensive that you have to do to be successful on the road is critical. You know, you can't go on the road and turn the ball over. You can't go on the road and not be able to run the football. You can't go on the road and have incredible amount of penalties. Those are things that are really difficult when you're in an environment that's not your own to overcome.
Baseball, the Brewers are on the road headed to New York, where they'll play the Yankees tomorrow night. The Crew lost in Pittsburgh after a controversial strike three call to end the game. Top of the ninth, the Crew down by one with a runner on base. Bally Sports, Wisconsin.
Two away in the ninth, and now it's William Contreras. He struck him out looking, and the Bucks got a call. They'll take it. They'll take the series. Bednar's 33rd save. A comeback over the first place Brewers.
Video showed the pitch was way outside. The Pirates ended up winning 5-4. Manager Craig Counsell asked, did the home plate umpire make a mistake?
You never want the game to end on a missed call.
Brewers starting pitcher Freddie Peralta was asked if the Pirates were doing something different to end his five-game winning streak.
I think it was on me. It wasn't because they were taking or doing something different. You know, it was because I wasn't locating really good today.
Drive safely, Wisconsin. Highway workers are out on the road. Help them out. Slow down, stay focused, and eliminate distractions. Work zone safety. It's everyone's responsibility.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry. Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Big Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
High temperatures reach up to 66 this afternoon under overcast skies. Northerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 53 tonight, mainly cloudy. High of 69 tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Bright sunshine expected Saturday with daytime highs approaching 72. 74 Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 63 degrees.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It is Thursday. Class is in session. We are joined by Professor John Shelton for office hours today as we dive into the history of Labor Day. But before we get started on that conversation, gentlemen, how are we doing this Thursday afternoon?
Good. It's one of those weird weeks, Will, where because of Labor Day, everything's a little condensed. So it feels like it's supposed to be relaxing because there's only 4 days to work, but everybody's running around trying to get everything done on a short schedule. So it's a good week, but a hectic week at the same time.
I concur. Good week, but a hectic week.
As Aaron and I have been scrambling around most of the morning, and again, Will just rolls out of bed and boom, look, he's in his studio because that's his easy access right there.
Although, for those of you watching on the stream, you can see there's a couch behind Luke, and every few days, I definitely spend 10, 20 minutes just laying on the couch.
Well-earned couch break that Aaron does here in the studio in the mornings. And we've got a new producer. He's going to be our morning producer, Sam Davison, helping to alleviate here around the Civic Media headquarters so Aaron won't have to take so many couch breaks as well.
I look forward to it.
Nice. Maybe he can have 8 hours for rest and 8 hours for what we will.
That's what we're trying for, Professor Shelton. It's a growing expansion here at Civic Media, and we're excited to add the team members to help continue to be able to provide the excellent service that we're doing here at Civic Media while also accounting for all of our excellent production staff's outside of work schedules as well.
Nice. Can I say something real quick about this week that we're having, the 4-day work week? Doesn't it feel right to have a 4-day work week? Like, isn't that something that maybe we could just do every week?
I don't get why this isn't a regular thing at this point, but, you know.
Regularly plan for it, I'm all in favor for it. I would probably prefer the extra day of the weekend on a Friday than a Monday, but, you know, I'm not going to be picky, I guess. If it would had to be a Monday, sure, I'll make it work. I just got
to
plan.
This guy will do whatever he can to get away from headlines of the week with me. He knows. He's scared. He's coming in scared this week.
Although the thing about it being a Friday or a Monday, at that point it wouldn't matter because society would start to change around it. Like, it only matters because right now Friday is the end of the week.
Look at that. The insight from Mr. Aaron Zommers right there.
And we're done. We're off
there. Great office hour session today, everybody.
Somebody pulled the plug. Oh, no. But speaking of this 4-day work week that we are experiencing, we wanted to have an excellent conversation last week with you, Professor Shelton, on the aspect of labor and the current events around it and just discussing its history when it came to the National Labor Review Board's decisions surrounding some major changes to what happens when it comes to companies recognizing a union. But we want to take a farther dive back now. Rather than just what's in the headlines with Labor, we wanted to have a discussion about the history of Labor Day, talk a little bit how we as a country got to this place, and what we can learn from the past to help influence the future, say a 4-day work week, if that were to be something that we could embrace here in the United States.
Yeah, so this is a super fun conversation, you know, and you know, we have so many holidays in this country, and we don't often think about what they mean. But you know, holidays are they've been set up for a reason, right? Whether it's Martin Luther King Day in January, which helps us to, you know, kind of commemorate the civil rights movement and King's call for, you know, racial and economic justice, actually. Or whether it's the 4th of July, where we honor the ideals of our nation's founding. Labor Day is one of those holidays, right? And it comes out of a very specific historical time. And I'm sure, you know, like a lot of your listeners out there, you know, you spent Labor Day enjoying the day off, giving yourself a 4-day week, barbecues, maybe having a few beers. I don't want to make any assumptions about people living in Wisconsin, but you know, it's in many ways, I explained this to a friend of mine, Labor Day is kind of like my Christmas, you know, because as a labor activist, this is the day when we really focus on workers and focus on work. And it's something that we should be focusing a lot more on for people who, you know, listen to this segment every week. They won't be surprised by that. But the history of Labor Day goes back very, very deep into our nation's past. The first kind of Labor Day that was celebrated was in New York City in 1882, and wasn't a federal holiday for about another 12 years. When I'm pretty sure it was, this tells you what kind of historian I am. I focus on working people, not presidents necessarily.
It was Grover Cleveland.
Thank you. That signed that into law in one of his non-consecutive terms, the second one. You know, so it wasn't a federal holiday yet, but it was pretty organic. It came out of workers in New York City who were organized in unions, obviously, engaging in a, you know, marching in a big labor parade. And that parade was about, it built on other traditions of parades in a lot of American cities. And you know, there had been other workers who, you know, marched before, obviously, before that. But the idea was to take up public space and to demonstrate the power through physical space, the literal physical space of workers in the city, right? When you have this, you know, huge throng of working people organized marching through the city, what better way to kind of demonstrate the power that working people have when they stand together? And so in New York, it became an annual tradition. And then again, 12 years later, it became a federal law. And it's important to recognize what was going on in the country at the time, right? Oftentimes we refer to the period we're living in right now as the Second Gilded Age, which makes us aware of the fact that there was probably a First Gilded Age, right? You don't typically have sequels about the first one, right? So the original Gilded Age, you know, starts in 1870s, 1880s, and it's very similar in terms of political economy to the kind of you know, state of affairs that we have now, in which you have a few individual people, many of them, almost all of them, actually white men, who are acquiring massive fortunes on the backs of working people. So, you know, today's Elon Musk's and Jeff Bezos's were in the 1880s and 90s, John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, these wealthy men who built empires with millions and millions of dollars, which would be the equivalent of billions today. And many of them did that by breaking unions. I mean, Carnegie, the steel company that he owned, like literally broke the union in 1892, and that played an enormous role in the amount of wealth he was able to acquire. So like in many ways, this was the central problem. I argue this to my students, and they're probably tired of hearing it, but it's true. The central problem in American politics from about the 1830s until the 1930s New Deal was what, how people were going to work, what their conditions were going to be look like, and workers were organizing to try and stop the excessive power of corporations and these wealthy individuals to control their lives and to fight for. And I threw this line out there earlier, but the fight of workers in the 1880s was 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will, meaning that their lives weren't going to be entirely consumed by their employment. And it was very common in Carnegie Steelworks, for example, for workers to work 10, 12 hour days, to work 60 hour weeks, that was just expected of them, and to make incredibly low wages. So the
work to live, you don't live to work.
Exactly. And so the efforts of workers to organize were central in Labor Day. This isn't just about celebrating the work that people do. It's about celebrating organizing as a fundamental principle of American life.
Folks, you're listening to Office Hours with Professor John Shelton here on Town Call. If you have a question for the professor, would like to contribute to our conversation about the history of Labor Day, we want to hear from you. 844-967-2789. Will, you had something to add there?
Yeah, I really liked, Professor, how you pointed out the use of how the parade kind of served as an occupation of physical space to demonstrate the collective power. It's a perfect representation of what we say today regarding organizing, because a phrase I like to use all the time is, you know, we, the working class, are never going to out-influence the ultra-elite. We're not going to be able to out-fundraise them, outspend them, but we can out-organize them because we outnumber them 1,000,000 to 1. And that is these marches was quite literally a physical representation of our collective power, in the sense that look how many of us there are, look how much space we take up, look what we could accomplish if we are standing together, as they quite literally march through the city together.
Yeah, 100%. I would add one thing to that though, Will, which is that it's not just our numbers, right? It is our numbers that matters, but it's also the fact that, and this is really important when we think about Labor Day, it's the fact that we actually do all the work that makes everything function, right? Mm-hmm. Like there is nothing happens in this country without labor. And, you know, even though we've seen, you know, we have all kinds of technologies that have taken away some of the kind of work that people have done, you know, in the past, made things easier for people in some ways, and in some ways added more demands on workers. Nothing happens. Jeff Bezos is not a billionaire without the work of all of those people who work in the warehouses, who drive those trucks, who do even the corporate management, like all of those. Jeff Bezos is not doing the work to make his corporation function every day. It's all of us.
All wealth is the product of labor, John Locke.
Yeah, 100%. And so that's a big part of this that we have to remember, is it's about the actual function of what we do that matters a lot, right? Like I always tell my students this, employers are not hiring you out of the goodness of their hearts because they want you to have a salary. They're doing it because they can't have, their businesses don't function without your work. And the second that you recognize that, and you recognize that if all of us stand together, that their business doesn't work, that's when we win. And up here in Green Bay, the Pier area, I'm really proud of the local Teamsters Union, Local 662, that just won a strike over healthcare with New Dairy Select. And they proved that. And they were outside in physical space. I walked on those picket lines with them. They were showing the value, the essential value of what they do to that company. And they won because they stood together and they said, this isn't going to function without us. And it couldn't.
And we saw it not only there in the Green Bay area, but the Lining Kugels workers striking in Chippewa Falls. The seeing the contracts that can be won for those workers when they do authorize and stop their labor through strike, what happens and the results of those efforts. We are speaking with Professor John Shelton, discussing the history of why we're all only working 4 days this week. Well, not all of us, because there were still plenty of people working on Labor Day. And so having this conversation about the past, where we got, how we got to where we are today. And I would like to have a little bit of a discussion on how we could possibly continue forward in the labor movements as well. But if you've got questions for the professor, we want to hear them here on Town Call. 844-967-2789. Download the Civic Media app. Take us with you on the go, and you can engage with Town Call right from the app as well. We're going to continue the conversation when we return.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The late summer heat wave is withering a big stretch of the country from the southwest to New England. Forecaster Craig Allen.
You also have high levels of humidity going along with this heat, so the heat index is running between 90 and 100 across most of these areas that have the heat advisory.
Out in the Atlantic, Hurricane Lee is now a Category 2 storm. Forecasters say it could become a 5. For the sixth time in 6 weeks, an inmate death at the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta. Malawi Davis is the attorney for the 24-year-old man's family.
It is about a tragedy that continues to happen, that lives remain in danger in the Fulton County Jail.
Secretary of State Blinken in Ukraine for a second day has toured some areas pounded by Russian attacks during the war.
We're working on helping communities recover and rebuild. We're working on making sure that investment comes to Ukraine so that the economy can recover.
CBS News Brief, I'm Steve Kathan.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
With the news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Waukesha's water transition has begun. The city has started the process of switching to Lake Michigan water with noticeable changes for homeowners and businesses expected next week. The Waukesha water bill will be going up, with the average homeowner projected to pay an extra $52 a month by 2027. The switch for homeowners and businesses is scheduled to happen between September 14th and 18th. Demo work on the Horizon West condos could start October 1st. The Waukesha Common Council this week approved a bid of $837,000 for the demolition of the building. The teardown follows a settlement between the city and the Horizon West Condominium Homes Association. AAA has the cost of gas in Waukesha and Milwaukee counties today at around $3.55 a gallon. It's about 10 cents cheaper than it is further south in Kenosha County. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here we go. For the fight auto workers. Were twisted, tricked, and robbed. To the peasant in Guatemala, in a sweatshop, got your job. And she can't feed her family on the pennies that she makes. Meanwhile, the crime rate's rising up and down the Great Lakes states.
Welcome, one. Welcome, all. Welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Class is in session. We are joined by Professor John Shelton for Office Hours, and we are covering the history of Labor Day today. Professor, before the break, we were discussing some of the strikes in recent times and the concessions that workers have been able to win back from their employers. Could you dive into some of the past examples as well that have shown the impact that the workers can have when they are able to stand on a united front?
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking right before the show started about International Workers Day, which is May 1st. And in most European countries, their equivalent of Labor Day is May Day. Mm-hmm. which stems from events that happened in the United States. And it's kind of an irony that, you know, we celebrate Labor Day when a lot of other countries take the example of a very radical movement in the United States as their example of International Workers Day. 1886, there was a concerted effort in multiple cities that year to get an 8-hour workday in March, April, and May. It was led by a lot of socialists and anarchists, depending on the city. But in Chicago, probably some of your listeners know about this. There was this sort of famous incident stemming from a strike at the McCormick Reaper Works, where workers were, you know, kind of in a public space, and somebody threw a bomb, killing a bunch of policemen. Probably was an anarchist, although it's unclear who actually threw it. And that led to this significant police repression. Those workers were fighting for, you know, an 8-hour workday. Well, there was a similar movement in Milwaukee, actually, and probably some folks in Wisconsin know about this. But workers really in April, May 1886 shut down the entire city of Milwaukee, more or less. And the governor, Jeremiah Rusk, sent in the militia to fire on strikers at Bayview. There's a monument there to memorialize it. And the Wisconsin Labor History Society does an annual commemoration, which I've spoken at before. And so 7 workers were killed, and then there was a significant wave of repression. But the reason I'm talking about this is because it actually did lead to something very meaningful. Sort of coming out of that, workers redoubled their efforts. And there's sort of this moment where, you know, out of the ashes of that, workers come together, and you have a push for socialism in Milwaukee, worker power in Milwaukee, that leads to a wave of socialist mayors. I mean, you can actually kind of draw a direct line from the ashes of that fight in 1886 to the wave of socialist mayors in Milwaukee. I don't know if y'all know this, but socialists were, the mayor of Milwaukee was socialist from about 1910 until 1960, with only a couple years of exceptions. And Emil Seidel was elected in 1910. And Milwaukee was known across the country for being at the forefront of supporting workers' rights and unions and municipal socialism, like good parks and public water and these kinds of things. So that's a real example. I mean, where workers organize, and maybe it takes a little while, but they ultimately end up, you know, kind of building power. There's lots of other examples we could kind of talk about, but you know, the quintessential example really is like the 1930s, of course, when you have a presidential administration, the FDR administration, that's trying to get the country out of the Depression, and a president that, as our good friend Harvey Kay points out, was really predisposed to kind of support the idea of workers having more rights as a way to essentially save American democracy. And so 1934, I mean, you have strikes across the country. In San Francisco, there's a general strike. There's a huge Teamster strike in Minneapolis. There's a textile strike that is all up and down the East Coast. Kohler workers, right? There's a really important history there. Kohler workers are on strike in 1934. And FDR comes to Wisconsin in 1934, gives a speech at Bay Beach. I probably learned about this from my buddy Harvey, but I teach this to my students now, this speech, where he basically comes to Green Bay and right at on the heels of the Kohler strike says, you know, basically sides with the workers and says that the Kohler Corporation is un-American, more or less. And so all that stuff gets pushed into this movement for workers legislation, the National Labor Relations Act, that gives us the National Labor Relations Board, that gives workers the really expectation. There's some other legislation involved later, but gives workers the expectation of an 8-hour workday and at fair pay and industrial democracy. And that all comes from the organizing that those workers did, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, Democrats in Congress in the 1930s just said, yeah, let's give workers the right to organize. That'll be a good thing to do. Not that they didn't, a lot of them believe it, but it took pushing from those workers. And so there's lots of other examples I could point to in the years since, but the 30s are really the kind of quintessential example of how organizing leads to dramatic changes and dramatic changes for the better.
And you mentioned all of those strikes in the 1930s, 1934, around the nation that, that helped lead to that. We are seeing a resurgence of that here in
hot labor
recent
summer,
years.
Baby.
The hot labor summer, as we discussed last week. but over the last couple of years here, we've seen John Deere strike. We saw Leining Kugel's workers here in Wisconsin strike. The Hollywood is striking right now. The Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild are both striking. There's been strikes all over the nation. Do you believe that this is a prime time then that we could see a resurgence in federal labor standards being improved for workers around the country? Or do you believe that we're seeing too much partisanship to be able to see the what was influencing Congress and the president in the 1930s not have the same effect and influence today?
Yeah, that's a tremendously good question, Luke, and that is the question, actually, right? So on the one hand, you know, you are seeing workers take a stand across this country. You know, you mentioned all those strikes. I mean, the other thing to mention is the UAW may very well go on strike. I mean, their president is essentially saying that you know, the automakers who are trying to just give them essentially a pittance of a raise when, you know, workers are being crushed by inflation and they've had a labor force that has been broken into two tiers, right? So new workers actually make less for the same work as people who have been there for a really long time, and that's a conscious strategy. You know, he's basically saying, Sean Fain is his name, he's basically saying, we have to get a fair contract because this is about the entire working class and about this question of whether we're going to allow people who are raking in, you know, millions and billions of dollars in profits are going to continue to squeeze us. And he's right about that. And so the militants that you're seeing everywhere from Hollywood to the auto industry, this is only going to continue.
Well, it's even more. It's Starbucks. It's Amazon. It's the pilots authorizing strike. Like there is, it is everywhere. And so to see it at the ground level of the workers being able to authorize the strikes and to be able to go to those means to say we are going to exercise our right as workers to withhold our labor. But it's not, in my opinion, being reflected in the federal representation. We saw there was agreement to stop the rail strike last year.
Yep.
And so do you believe that there is a difference between what we saw in the 1930s and what we're experiencing today?
Yes.
Well, and if I may add something too, John, I'm really glad you mentioned the UAW strike because I was going to bring that up as well. Some of the quotes from Sean Fain are excellent. Our intent is not to strike. Our intent is to get a fair agreement. But as we get down to the wire here, there's three companies to bargain with and 10 days left to do it. I know what it looks like. We are fed up living in a country where corporations violate labor rights and there's little to no consequence for their action. Look at what's going right now across the country. Thousands of Starbucks workers voted to organize and the company refuses to bargain. We're facing the same thing right now. He's noting that this is not just his union that he's facing, right? He's mentioning Starbucks as another group of workers that are facing the same thing. These massive corporations are unwilling to bargain with their workers who, as you noted earlier, are the ones who are generating all of the wealth for the company.
Exactly. Yeah. And I appreciate both you and Luke keeping me on task here. in terms of the question, and the question is a very important one, right? So we've got all this militants. Where I get frustrated is because I don't think enough Democrats, some get it, but I don't think enough of them understand that the future of democracy in this country and the future, frankly, of you know, whether we're actually going to uphold the ideals of what it means to be an American rest with creating a strong labor movement. And so you have all these workers who want to you know, build power. I mean, Starbucks and Amazon are the quintessential examples. And we have a labor law that's just completely outdated. And what I would like to see from Democrats is a laser focus on enabling workers to organize and collectively bargain, not staying neutral, right? In the 1930s, there was a series of, I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was the CIO, the Congress of Industrial Organizations, that put this out. It had a poster of FDR basically saying, I want you, it's like the military recruiting posters, I want you to join a union. That is what we need to see from Democrats. Every worker in this country needs to see that Democrats from Biden on down to state level office holders want them to join a union, want them to build power at the expense of their employer in order
to make the message of government leadership siding with you, the worker, instead of the corporations would be so, it's so different to what we as Americans are accustomed to over the past 20, 30 years of neoliberalism that, I mean, that would be incredibly, incredibly powerful statement. You noted as well, John, from your piece, the percentage of workers represented by unions exploded from just over 10% in 1929 to 35% by the early 1950s. This is not a coincidence.
No, not at all. And, you know, there's legislation that we absolutely have to pass. Some of your listeners probably know about this, the Protect the Right to Organize Act, the PRO Act, which is a piece of legislation that Democrats have been supporting in Congress. It would do a number of things to level the playing field between workers and employers. It would ban things like captive audience meetings, where employers can basically just bring in workers and make them listen to hours and hours of anti-union propaganda. It would force corporations like Starbucks that are refusing to bargain, and a lot of other things too. We need legislation like that, and Democrats have supported it, but we need more than that. That needs to be the number one priority. And imagine if Joe Biden had said, you know what, we need the PRO Act so bad, I'm calling on workers in this country to occupy the mall, the National Mall, right outside of Congress until we get this law passed. Imagine a president doing that, right? That might actually move the needle and go beyond these like parliamentary games that Republicans play in Congress. I mean, the filibuster should be gone. It should have been gone a long time ago. But the, you know, these things that actually prevent us from getting the legislation we need for a fair economy and a robust democracy in this country.
Folks, you're listening to Office Hours with Professor John Shelton here on Town Call. If you've got a question for the professor, we want to hear it. 844-967-2789. Let's head over to the phone lines. We got Mark from Prairie du Sac calling in. Mark, what's your question for the professor on this Thursday afternoon?
Yeah, how do we end the policy of using prison labor? You know, as an example, Robin Voss uses prison labor for, you know, his factory. And I mean, it traces all the way back to the Civil War. Apparently, in the South, it was their industrialization. Their factory owners there were trying to employ prison slave labor to run their factories, and that we have that here. And it impacts, you know, salaries as far as workers are concerned. When you're able to use, you know, incarcerated labor to, you know, work in your factories at pennies on the dollar to produce your product, rather than actually having to hire workers at a living wage in your factories, that and perhaps that's a stretch, but I mean that it is just an abuse of labor to use prison labor, as far as I'm concerned.
Appreciate the phone call, Mark. Professor Shelton, your thoughts on Mark's question there?
Yeah, I mean the obvious thing to do would be to pay incarcerated people. First of all, we've got to incarcerate less people, but pay incarcerated people minimum wage at least. You know, that's one step in the right direction. If we have time after the break, there's a whole long history that I can talk more about here. But, you know, the easy answer is pay people what they deserve to make.
There we go, folks. We are joined by Professor Shelton on this Thursday afternoon. If you've got a question or want to share your thoughts, 844-967-2789, Town Call. It's going to be right back.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms,
or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
High temperatures reach up to 66 this afternoon under overcast skies, northerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 53 tonight, mainly cloudy. High of 69 tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Bright sunshine expected Saturday with daytime highs approaching 72. 74 Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 63 degrees.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night.
Welcome, one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Class is in session today. We are joined by Professor John Shelton for Office Hours, talking the history of Labor Day. And Professor, something we discuss frequently on the show is how so many of society's issues today are intertwined. We had an excellent question before the break discussing prison labor and that impact on not just the over-incarceration of American citizens, but how their labor directly impacts some of these industries involved. Would you care to touch on that a little bit more in depth?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Mark for the question. It's a great question. Organized workers have been pushing back against convict labor since the 19th century. One of the earliest labor organizations in this country, at least, you know, sort of like national organization, is called the Knights of Labor. And in their like kind of statement of principles platform from the 1870s, convict labor, abolishing convict labor was a big part of what they were pushing for. And they understood it much the way Mark did, right? Which was, it's not just immoral, it also undercuts the wages that other workers get, right? So, you know, this is absolutely something that we should be thinking about. We should be thinking about how it is that we're incarcerating people for so many things and reducing that. But again, like, just because somebody's incarcerated, why does that mean they don't deserve to get wages, right? And the other, you know, and the other thing is, like, in terms of the incarceration, a lot of times you have folks who they're in private prisons, or there's contracts with outside vendors that jack up the prices on everything from phone calls to ramen noodles. Just because somebody's incarcerated doesn't mean they don't deserve fair wages. They're still doing the same work as anybody else. And if you really are serious about rehabilitating them, pay them while they're in prison so that they can actually come out with some money saved up and have a better shot at being rehabilitated into society.
But it is abundantly clear that American prisons have no focus on rehabilitation whatsoever.
Yeah, no, it's about revenge.
That's a longer conversation for another edition of Town Call. Yeah. But discussing the history of Labor Day, the labor movement here in America, and as you've noted, the slogan, the rallying cry for a lot of the 1800s, early 1900s, was 8 hours for work, 8 hours for leisure, and 8 hours for rest. And so that applied to an 8 hour work day. Now we are seeing, as we kicked off the show, discussing the potential for a 4 day work week instead of a 5 day work week. Professor, what can you share with us about where the labor movement is heading and how trends like a 4 day work week, like we're experiencing right now, could become more common here in the US?
So one really crucial thing about 8 hours, 8 hours, 8 hours, right? The crucial thing about that was an 8 hour workday came with the assumption that workers would not be paid less, that they would get paid the same amount for an 8 hour workday that they were getting paid for 10. And so any conversation that we're going to have about a 32 hour work week needs to be connected to the fact that people are not going to lose their wages because they're working a shorter work week. Well, we should decide as a society, and there's a great book that came out a few years ago by John Nichols and Robert McChesney called people get ready. It's an argument for a jobless future. And what they argue is that, you know, we have all this technology. We should be using that not to enrich billionaires, but to reduce the amount of work that people don't want to do, right? And so a 32-hour work week could be a step in that direction. I mean, imagine if you had an extra day each week, you know, to spend time with family, to pursue a hobby, to learn a language, you know, to write poetry. I mean, who cares? You know, like
I would say go to the doctor if we could afford that, but there are other opportunities too that day-to-day life that you don't necessarily, you can't take advantage of during the work week unless you take off of work anyways.
Right. Right. I mean, and even beyond that, Will, you could learn a little bit about fantasy football so you don't get crushed. I mean,
oh, dude, unnecessary.
Oh, that will okay. be, we might have to work that into our Thursday conversations with the professor as well.
John's getting an invite to my league next year so I can show him a thing or two.
We
now.
Got a reigning Ooh. Champion in our midst. John letting us know during one of the commercial breaks that he won one of the leagues he was in last year. So,
But all joking aside, my team name last year was called Woke Mob, by the way, which I think was a great nickname. Was a great name. In all seriousness, we should be thinking about using the fruits of all that we've produced as a society to enable people to have better lives, right? And so we should absolutely be thinking about a 32-hour work week. Unions have pushed for this in the past. There was kind of wasn't a super serious movement, but there was a movement in like the 1960s, you know, to start rethinking some of those things. And I think there's been some union leaders recently who have talked. I think it might have even been Sean Fain who talked about the possibility of a 32-hour work week. These are things that we should absolutely be thinking about. Like, the only reason that we're continuing to have a 40-hour work week is because it allows our bosses to squeeze more out of us. And that's because that's just how things have always been done, at least since the 1930s when we got the 40-hour work week with the Fair Labor Standards Act in 1938. Maybe it's time we rethink that metric. I mean, that's been what, like almost 80 years ago now, over 80 years.
I was going to say almost 90 years ago now. Next year, it'll be 90 years already. So there's some time passed in between those two. And I think the important part is having these conversations. The first graph, anytime they're thinking about adjusting a 32-hour work week becoming the more standard is the graph of worker productivity versus wages
say that,
over the last since the 1930s, since like the 1960s and 70s, we've seen productivity skyrocket. And still,
as technology has advanced, because individual employees are able to accomplish so much more, but rather than being able to, you know, take the additional accomplishments and then save time on the back end, they're just being forced to spend more time and produce more and more and more and more.
Exactly. So it's important to have these conversations. We really appreciate you, Professor Shelton, for joining us on this Thursday edition of Town Call. If you miss any portion of the podcast, you're going to definitely want to check it out on Civic Media's website. And looking forward to continuing the conversations on these Thursday afternoons. I apologize that school is back in session, full swing for you. I am in complete denial that summer is gone. I was in the rain last night playing volleyball still. So in my opinion, it's still summer, but I know that you've got the classes to continue to teach, so we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us here on Town Call. Will, we got headlines of the week coming up tomorrow. Any other big fun things we got cooking here on Town Call?
Well, we got fantasy football this weekend, but I've been catching strays for that every time I mention that, so I might have to start not referring to that.
Well, you brought it up so frequently, I figured you'd want to talk about it more. That's all. I was worried that you weren't getting your due. So if we bring it up, it's totally okay.
I'll always talk about it. I'm more than happy to talk about it.
Well, but I'm gonna get access to the team, and I'm gonna make a bunch of changes. So just to let you know.
Okay, well, I guess you won't be getting access then anymore.
Oh, okay. Oh, then I can just plead ignorance when it
Team
comes to
Team Town
last place.
Ball in doesn't necessarily need you this year.
Just ball in solo. Just not the full duo. Just there you go, running off on your own. Folks, Town Call will be back tomorrow at 12:15. Talk to y'all then.
Take it easy, party people.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
As an emergency medical technician, I hope motorists can remember these four life-saving words. Buckle up, phones down. It means wear a seatbelt. Every seat, every trip. And when driving, stay focused on the road ahead. Protect yourself, spare your family, and emergency responders from needless trauma.
Do your part to help us move towards zero deaths on Wisconsin roads. A safety message, sponsored by the U.S. and Wisconsin DOTs.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.